Philip II of Macedonia. Philip captures Olynthus. Now, Philip returned to Chalcedon in the summer of 1348 BCE, by which time most of the Athenian troops had left. Athens debated what to do and eventually decided to form a new expedition to aid the Chalcidian League. It was too small to have made any difference, even if it had managed to arrive before the fall of the city of Olynthus. But once again, the prevailing winds of these months were in Philip's favor, and the Athenians were, once again, late. The king advanced, taking city after city, aided by the realization that his power was overwhelming, and also by generous gifts to leaders willing to change sides. Soon Olynthus was surrounded and largely cut off from the sea. The Olynthians sent ambassadors to ask for peace and were given the blunt reply that, quote, "For the rest of the time it's not possible for you to live in Olynthus and me in Macedonia," end of quote. Or that's what Demosthenes claims. At some point, two of the aristocratic commanders of the Olynthian cavalry defected to Philip, bringing many of their men with them. Further treachery aided the Macedonians during the siege, and it's unclear whether the city was stormed or eventually just capitulated. Either way, it was sacked, the survivors sold into slavery, and the polis actually abolished, along with the Chalcidian League. In effect, Olynthus ceased to exist, and refugees were granted asylum and citizenship in Athens if they wanted it. Athenian captives were not sold, but were imprisoned. No such clemency could be expected by Philip's half-brothers, who were captured and executed, removing the closest adult rivals to the throne. Before the city fell, Philip sent word to Athens claiming that he wanted peace, although it's hard to gauge his sincerity. There was no let-up in the assaults on Olynthus. While Philip's squadron of little ships was snapping up Athenian merchants whenever they had an opportunity, and freelancing pirates joined in. This led to a formal complaint from a man taken prisoner by the raiders during the truce surrounding the Olympic Games, who had paid his own ransom, raised the matter in his return to Athens. A delegation was sent to Macedonia, where it was assured of Philip's desire for peace, but moves began to negotiate failed when the assembly changed its mind. Instead, Athens sent ambassadors all around Greece seeking allies for a grand coalition against Macedonia. No one was interested, so the war lumbered on, neither side prosecuting it with any great energy. In early of autumn 1348 BCE, Philip returned home and celebrated his Macedonian's own Olympic-style festival at Dium, held in honor of the Olympian Zeus. Artists, writers, and athletes from much of the Greek world attended, lured by the prizes and the king's generous hospitality. At least one Athenian actor attended, a man named Satyrus. He was unlikely to have been alone, reminding us of the importance of truces surrounding such games and the prestige of competition. Demosthenes claims that Philip asked the actor what gift he would like. Satyrus requested the freedom of the two daughters of an old friend, Apollophanes of Pydna, who presumably had moved to Olynthus after the fall of his home city. Both girls were approaching marriageable age, and the king granted them freedom and suitable dowries. Such generosity came easily, for Philip was riding high once more. In just over a decade, he had made his kingdom secure against all the closest threats and vastly expanded his territory and resources, with the occupation of the Chalcedon being another rich gain. As importantly, he had recovered from his defeat and seemed once again secure and powerful. As the Athenians found out, no one else was keen to confront the king or saw a pressing need to do so. While this was in part based on the well-entrenched suspicion of Athens, it also showed that few saw the king as vulnerable or more threatening than any other of their nearer neighbors. Now, Philip had claimed that he wanted peace with Athens while he was besieging Olynthus, but had been rebuffed. He was intended active in Thrace in these years, and this reinforced Athens' fears over security of their vital supply route through the Dardanelles Straits. The war between the two continued, although neither made a major effort to win it. Instead, both concentrated on securing territories and allies in Thrace. Many Athenians still referred to the struggle as the war over Amphipolis, and naively clung to the hope that they could still recover the city. Such optimism was unrealistic, but instinctive. Athens had been the greatest power in the Hellenic world until its defeat by Sparta in the Peloponnesian War in 404 BCE. accepting that she would never again rise to such glory was too bitter for the citizens obsessed with honor, which meant that setbacks were seen as temporary. Athens should not back down, least of all to an upstart king of a kingdom only recently seen as important. Against this, the war was getting nowhere and costing lots of money. A feeling grew that Athens needed strong allies to defeat Macedonia, or at least a spell of peace so that the city could build up its own strength once again. And so that's what ends up taking place. There's this little peace between the two sides so that Athens can kind of recoup. But we're still going to have the Sacred War going on at the same time. Now the sources for this, The Politics by Aristotle, The Histories by Herodotus, Histories, 12 volumes, by Diodorus Siculus, Peloponnesian War by Thucydides, and The Lives by Plutarch. Philip and Alexander, Kings and Conquerors by Goldsworthy. History of Macedonia, Volume 1 and Volume 2 by Hammond. In the Shadow of Olympus, The Emergence of Macedonia by Borgia. So I hope you enjoyed that. And as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment. Check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.